Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
Okay, the football conversation continues this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And this time, we're going to shine the light on one of the great comeback stories in the NFL. In fact, Chapter 2 of a legendary NFL life of Peyton Manning, his comeback with the Denver Broncos. It's a wonderful new book that's just been released titled No Plan B, Peyton Manning's Comeback with the Denver Broncos. We're delighted to welcome in Mark Kisla. He is an author, an award-winning sports writer with the Denver Post. Congratulations on your new book, Mark.
I appreciate it, and it was a fascinating study. If you've ever sat in front of your TV, watched Peyton Manning go to the line of scrimmage and start gesticulating and shouting and looking like a traffic cop and wonder what is going on in that guy's head, well, there's a chapter dedicated entirely to what's going on in his head and how he sees the football field and why he's one of the most beautiful minds to ever play in the NFL.
Well, Mark, you know, a lot of folks said that he should hang up his cleats and call it a career, and the Peyton Manning, you know, controversy, it surrounded his arrival with the Broncos. And I really think when I step back and I look at his career and what he's been able to accomplish, he really is a story of inspiration. I mean, he's had multiple neck injuries, and, you know, leading the Broncos last year to a 13-4 record was really something.
Yeah, well, you know, here's where it will touch a nerve with a lot of people. You probably know a brother or an uncle or a sister, or maybe your mom in the last 5 years, and they're darn good at what they do, whether they're a CEO or an architect or a baker or a bus driver. And in the last 5 years, a lot of people in America lost their jobs. And a lot of, and they went, what the heck for? You know, what did I do wrong? Well, Peyton Manning is one of the best quarterbacks ever to play the game. And let's be blunt, he got fired. His boss came in and say, dude, you're great. We don't need you no more. Now, Peyton Manning's got way more money in the bank than I do, and most people do, so he didn't have to worry about, you know, buying the groceries. But if you, like a lot of guys in this country, your identity, your ego is tied to your job. And his job was yanked out from under him, and he had to go out on the street and find a new one. Did he find one? Sure he did. Did he find a high-paying one? Sure he did. But was it a shock to his system? You don't even know. You don't even know the beginning of the story, and if you read this book, you'll know all the story.
Well, Mark, he really is the ultimate competitor. It's hard to believe, what, 37 years old? But take us behind the scenes with the Broncos Executive VP of Football Operations, John Elway, and just the thought process that he was presented with two very different paths for the franchise, dealing with the aftermath of Josh McDaniel, and then, of course, the Tim Tebow dilemma. He obviously made the right choice.
Tim Tebow came into Denver, and he, what I like to say is he turned every Broncos fan into a little league parent, because Tim Tebow is an inspirational guy himself, and he became everybody's favorite football son. Well, Tebow took over the team when it was in the dumper, and he went 7-4, and he ultimately led the Broncos to a stirring playoff win over Pittsburgh. But again, in the book, John Elway was never convinced that Tim Tebow could win a championship for the Broncos. He was never convinced that he could throw the football effectively in the NFL. And before Tebow ever won that playoff game against Pittsburgh, which is a great part of Broncos lore, Elway and his top brass in the Broncos front office were already talking about getting rid of Tebow and already talking about bringing in Peyton Manning. And so there are interesting machinations behind the scene in every business, and the NFL is no different.
We're talking to Mark Kisla with the Denver Post about his brand new book, No Plan B, Peyton Manning's Comeback with the Denver Broncos. You're just talking about John Elway, of course, one of the all-time greats to have ever played the game. The common denominator between these two different what style quarterbacks, but the one characteristic that is similar between the two, of course, is they love to win, and they know how to.
The similarities are very important. When Manning had his shock to the system, he needed to go work someplace new. He could have gone to San Francisco, but he didn't think that he and Mr. Harbaugh out there would get along very good. So he knew John Elway was a former Hall of Fame quarterback. He knew John Elway went late in his career and had a lot of questions about whether John Elway was a winner or not. And he had a great comfort level with John Elway. And ultimately, Manning's decision was a people decision as much as a football decision. And this book isn't about the day-to-day, this is what happened on October 3rd. Those books have been done very well in the past, where you crown for a season day by day. This is about a relationship and how Peyton Manning learns to love a new hometown and learns that there's more than one team for him, even though he never thought he'd leave the Colts.
Well, he certainly proved that he was able to recapture his success, the league's comeback player of the year, and, of course, the Broncos' best season in 6 years. It was just incredible, top five offense and defense. Mark, thank you again so much. Congratulations on the book. Again, it is titled No Plan B, Peyton Manning's Comeback with the Denver Broncos. We'll talk to you again real soon. Thank you, Mark.
Go buy you one. I think you'll like it. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Jason Peter with us in just a moment.
The work of FCA can be summed up in four words: coaches, campus, camp, and community. The four C's are vital in fulfilling FCA's vision of seeing the world impacted for Jesus Christ through the influence of athletes and coaches.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
And we are wrapping things up this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you are along with us. Our next segment is being powered by our good friends at Mercer Well Service. We want to direct you to our radio website right now at eradiosports.com. Some exciting things are going to be happening over the next few weeks. You want to stay tuned. Join us at Twitter as well. Well, I tell you what, as we get close to wrapping things up on this weekend's program, it's always a pleasure to catch up with a defensive standout at the University of Nebraska. Had an incredible career there, the double nickel, the one and only Jason Peter. I know this is a very, very busy time of year for you, as we are looking so forward to your golf tournament next week, Jay.
I know. It seems like the last one from last year just ended a month or two ago, but we're right back at it again and just tying up a few loose ends, but we'll be ready to roll. We're certainly excited for you guys to be coming up again, and hopefully it'll be another successful year.
Jason, what's the weather forecast? I mean, what can we anticipate up in Lincoln, Nebraska?
Well, it's been absolutely brutal for about the past 2 weeks, in 95, 98, humidity's up there.
Really?
But for next week, we're looking at like 78, 80, perfect fall weather, actually football weather. So looks like we're going to luck out.
Oh, that's great. It'll feel like the month of October for us. Well, Jason, we have a number of things I want to hit on. I want to get your perspective on in college football. It seems like we're always leading in our discussion each and every week talking about your Nebraska Cornhuskers. And all I have to say is, what in the world was going on last week? I know that's been a week ago, but you guys survived that late scare from Wyoming. I mean, that was just way too close for comfort, 37-34.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's not just, I guess, 1 week. You can take this back to last year, where I believe there were four or five games where teams amassed over 600 total yards of offense. I mean, you go to UCLA game, the Ohio State game. You had the last two games of the season with the Big 12 championship against Wisconsin. That was just an annihilation of the Nebraska defense. And then Georgia as well in the bowl game put up huge numbers. And now I think, you know, people, it happens every off season, right? There's always the hype that's built up, especially in a place like Nebraska where it's 24/7 surrounding Nebraska football. And even if the year looks bleak, somehow or another, they spin it so that people are excited and there's that anticipation for a great year. And golly, I'll tell you what, I mean, people were kind of maybe pointing down the road saying, well, maybe at a Michigan or maybe, you know, you play another Big Ten school where, you know, the defense might be exposed. They were not expecting it in the first game of the season against Wyoming. And you got to tip your hat to Dave Christensen, who he must just love, absolutely love playing against Nebraska, because the OT at Missouri, they would just, you know, run up and down the field on Nebraska defenses. And I think it was 07 or 08 when he was in here, and it was just a bloodbath as well. The problem is that there is now, I think, a book on Bo Pelini's defense, and he's reluctant to change. You know, and this is kind of the problem that people are having. It's kind of, you know, he's going to put his defense out there, and no matter who the players are, no matter how young they are, no matter how athletic they are, this is the defense we're running, and we're not changing it at all. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. You know, maybe it worked at LSU. The truth is, you and I could go down there as defense coordinator and throw out 11 guys, and chances are you're going to have a pretty good team. I mean, they just have that type of athlete down at a place like LSU. Nebraska's different. I mean, he had some success with Callahan's guys, in particular, and Ndamukong Suh, but there was also a handful of other NFL players that he inherited from Bill Callahan, and those were the best years. But now, since he's gone out and handpicked his own guys, this defense will not work, especially when you talk about the youth that they have up front and really up in the front seven. You know, you kind of scratch your head, you know, when a defensive end doesn't know how to play a power G play, or, you know, linebackers are just getting trucked, or, you know, offense coordinators are looking at it and saying, golly, I mean, every time we're in a one back, you know, we'll just motion the back out of the backfield and the linebacker's going to chase him. He's going to run with him. And, you know, then you're kind of left with 5-on-4 in the middle. And if you have a running quarterback, you're outnumbered. You can't win by a numbers game unless you have somebody like a Suh up front where he can take up two blockers and get rid of them and still make the play. They don't have guys like that. And I don't know if he's hoping that, you know, something is going to just tick or click in one of these guys' body or mind, you know, and they're just going to get it. But young guys on the defensive line, especially at a defensive tackle position, that's usually not a recipe for success.
Well, head coach Bo Pelini, I mean, I think he really hit it on the head in postgame. He just said, you know, the Huskers have got a lot of work to do. I mean, the good news is you guys are 1-0, but this was not a clean performance. And as you had just said and stated, you know, Jay, you start looking at those raw stats. I mean, the defense giving up over 600 yards over what, say, the average of the past four games, there's still so much work that's got to be done, and it is early in the season.
Yeah, and people were expecting that this defense would give up some yards and give up some points. I think people were kind of hoping that the offense would just put up enough points to win these shootout-type games. And they've really gotten off scot clean here this past week. The offense, who, you know, you had the quarterback talking about how this is going to be one of the best offensive lines ever at Nebraska, and the offense as a whole has the potential to be one of the best at Nebraska. You had wide receivers talking about how this is going to be a team that averages 50 points a game, and here you go out against a Wyoming defense that, I mean, let's face it, they are not a big-time Division I defense. That was the worst part of their team last year and probably will get exposed this year. But the offense just, they had opportunity after opportunity to put this game away, and they just couldn't do it. And, you know, Taylor Martinez was behind two turnovers, and that was an issue last year. He's got now a dinged-up shoulder. I give him credit. It looks like he's throwing the ball better. He spent some time in the offseason again working with one of these quarterback gurus. But, you know, if you can't take care of the football, I mean, that goes up on the chalkboard on top of everything else. When coaches are listing, you know, things that you got to get done during the course of a game or what makes a team successful.
Valuing the possessions. I mean, like you said, Jay, I mean, you got to credit Wyoming. They made some big plays, converted those two late turnovers into touchdowns to pull within three with, what, a minute 32 left.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people who thought Wyoming deserved to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost feel bad for them, you know, because here they are, I mean, completely mismatched. The quarterback is, what a great player he was. I mean, this Wyoming team, they're going to score some points on some people. I don't know how long Christensen will be there if he, you know, keeps this up. But, you know, he's done a good job now, and I think this is a year there, and he's gotten players that can run his system. But, you know, I mean, they made one of the receivers look like the next coming of Jerry Rice out there. And, you know, he's not a big guy. He's not a fast guy. But Nebraska just, you know, they couldn't get pressure on the quarterback. They looked out of shape. That was the most discouraging thing, was Wyoming, who's coming from, a state where, sure, they're at a higher altitude, but, you know, they weren't used to that weather. They were fine with it. They looked like they had been the ones that were practicing in this heat all winter long. And it was disappointing on a lot of levels. And if Bo's defense is, you know, if he's got to dial it up every time in order to get pressure, I mean, offensive coordinators know that. That's part of his book, right? They know that, okay, if I'm an offensive coordinator and I know that this is a situation where Bo has got to have pressure on the quarterback, I know as an offensive coordinator, he's going to bring extra guys because they can't get there with just the four guys up front. So he's going to bring extra guys. So what are we going to do? We're just going to hit the hot receiver. We're going to hit the guy where the pressure's coming from. We're just going to hit those quick slants or like I said, those hot receivers, and we'll pick up the first down, and we'll continue to move the chains. And that's, you know, what you want ultimately as an offense. Continue to move the chains and eventually score.
Well, hopefully they'll have some significant improvement at home once again as they host Southern Mississippi. Boy, you guys have a lot of games. I mean, what, four games? And then you have a bye on the 28th. So hopefully that'll play out to your benefit. But now let's move ahead. Jason, I want you to weigh in on Texas A&M's Johnny Manziel, the unteachable, maybe perhaps one of the headlines said the unreachable. I don't know. What did you take away from his performance last week against Rice and the antics?
Well, certainly you could tell the impact that he has on his team. They were pretty stale in that first half, and he came in and got them going. And, you know, he's a Heisman Trophy winner, so I don't think anybody is second-guessing what he can do out on the field. It's just everything that comes along with it, and the taunting and he's claiming, I guess, or some of his teammates are claiming that these guys were taunting him prior to the game. And, well, you know, that's expected. I mean, we were used to it. I mean, I imagine anybody or any team that has had success is used to that sort of stuff.
You have to wonder what Kevin Sumlin said to him in pregame. You know that he had to have addressed that and said that they're going to be coming at you. You can't react and respond.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the big issue now is that people are claiming that Manziel doesn't listen to Sumlin, and it's actually Manziel's team and it's not Sumlin. And I have a hard time, jumping on that ship. I just think you have a guy that is, he's reluctant to listen. I mean, he's a spoiled little brat. He's driving Mercedes around in college, and he's playing Pebble Beach, and he's sitting courtside, and whether or not he paid for that with some money that maybe he had earned on the side, or whether you're paying for it, that's a whole other argument or conversation. But I just I think if you're an A&M fan, you just kind of bite your lip here and you say, okay, if he keeps moving our offense and we keep winning games with him, well, we'll just kind of keep quiet, I guess, and just hopefully, we'll be there in the end and maybe we get to hoist the trophy at the end of the year. But, he's certainly going to be one of the most controversial players in college football. And, as an athlete, you like the arrogance to a certain extent, but I just think the way that he goes about it, it irks people. It turns you the wrong way.
You ever seen a player do that to a coach, you know, bump his coach and be so disrespectful on the collegiate level?
No. Not at the collegiate level. At the NFL level, I had a courtside seat to Kevin Green choking out Kevin Steele on the sidelines in my rookie year.
Oh, my.
But obviously, that's the professional level. And at the collegiate level, I can't recall anything like that happening. I know I had witnessed some stuff during practice where you have some guys that, whether they're frustrated with playing time or what have you, that they do something stupid. But nothing like that where, you got cameras on you and stuff. And, but this goes back to the SEC media days when everyone was saying, why doesn't someone reprimand him? Why doesn't he do something? Why does he kind of... why is he doing what the parents seem to have done? And that's just enabled them or coddled them or whatever you want to call it. But maybe that's just someone's personality. Would Nick Saban have stood for it? I highly doubt it. Would Bo Pelini have stood for it? I highly doubt it. I'm sure there's a lot of coaches that would have said no, but I think some of these coaches also realize what a cutthroat business it is and they're kind of, willing to sacrifice some things, I guess, in order to get some of those wins.
You know, Jason, I asked Brian Jones of CBS Sports, our first guest, this question, and we were talking about Johnny Manziel. And isn't it remarkable just how much he seems to have changed in terms of his personality over the past 9 months since becoming a Heisman winner? I mean, he truly has gone to his head.
Yeah, and there have been some people that said, he was the same way last year. It's just that nobody really... the media onslaught wasn't following him at that point. It wasn't until he became one of these front runners for the Heisman and then ultimately winning the Heisman that did the microscope, I guess, really go on him. So I don't know. It's obviously. I mean, like I told you with reading some articles, especially that Wright Thompson piece where he spent some time with the family. I mean, you really, I think, get a better grasp of who this kid is, why he's that way, and not that you feel any sympathy or compassion, but as a parent, I think, that's kind of the difficult... The things that you're dealt with every day when raising parents or when raising kids, and what do you let them get away with and what do you don't? What's an example of you, where you have to put your foot down here? And I think when you learn more about maybe the things that they let go on, then you understand maybe why he is the way that he is. And, it gives a little bit more clarity, but I don't know if it necessarily makes me excuse the way that he acts in public.
Jason Peter with us just a few more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Of course, weekends start early, and we want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. We've got some very big things on the horizon. You'll be hearing about it over the next 2 weeks. Jason will continue to join us with our Under the Helmet segment. And Jason, one of the things I wanted you to weigh in on, let's talk some NFL right now. Rex Ryan's trip to the Clemson game, some saying that it's showing that he is losing interest and influence with the New York Jets. Do you agree?
Well, I do think that his involvement or the power that he has probably has diminished. I think, you have new management in there, and Rex kind of tied himself to Mark Sanchez. When they traded up and they drafted this kid, what was it, number 5, 6, something like that? And that certainly hasn't worked out. But for me, this has nothing to do with that. This is your son, and he's about to run out into his first big-time college football game. And as a father, I mean, do you know how many things he's missed
yeah.
because of his own work schedule? And certainly, you know, he signed up for it. He knew that there were going to be things that he wasn't going to be able to attend. And but, you know, this, I mean, he was, like he said, he was accessible throughout the entire day. You know, he was in contact with players, with GMs, with all of that stuff, with his other coaches. I find it just ridiculous. I just think that the ship is sinking in New York, and now you have a lot of people that are just piling on, and every little thing that he does is going to get exposed, and whether it's right or wrong, you know, there'll always be people out there that will find a problem with whatever he does. And that's just the way that it is, especially in New York. You're talking about, you know, the media capital of the world, and it's just it's a guarantee that stuff will happen.
Well, my opinion, of course, Rex Ryan obviously is a great dad out there showing support. We're getting ready to wrap it up this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with Jason Peter, our Under the Helmet segment. You can check out all of his stuff online at jasonpeter.com. And last week, Jason, as we wrapped up our program, we didn't get a chance for you to weigh in on the concussion settlement, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, people hear the number, $754 million or whatever it was, and that's certainly a lot of money, but that's a drop in the bucket for the NFL. And, you know, it's I guess, a step in the right direction. You know, you always run the risk of taking it to trial and ending up with nothing, and I think there are guys out there that need immediate help right now. You know, I know when they first reported it, there were people saying, oh, that's $170,000 per player, you know, with the 4,400 guys that were in the lawsuit. And obviously that's not the way it's set up. It's that money's there, kind of in this pool, and all of these players have the right to go and see a doctor, and if you have issues, you know, they take into consideration how long you played, all that stuff, which to me, I don't see how that's relevant, how long you played, whether it's 3 years or 10 years or 15 years. If your brain's got damage and you don't know what day of the week it is, why should the guy that, you know, played 10 years get more? You know, you're both screwed either way, and it's all about the care. And you know, so I hope that I'm never one of those guys that's able to collect on, you know, the $5 million, because then you don't know, you know, your kids' names, and you don't know what day of the week it is. And, you know, I hope I'm never like that. You know, at least there's some opportunity there for guys to get some help.
Well, the NFL commissioner, I thought it was interesting, his comments on the concussion settlement. He was saying, what, no admission of guilt.
Right. And that's, I guess, the disappointing thing is, they kind of get off on this without ever having to take responsibility for it or say that, you know, there are issues. But, you know, I think everybody can see that. Everybody knows. Why else would the NFL be making all these changes then if they're not admitting that this game can cause, you know, permanent brain damage you know, ultimately have guys that you know, take their lives. You know, why is there such the pressure, or why are they falling in to that pressure of trying to make the game much safer? Obviously, you know, I think most people that have some common sense can put two and two together and realize that there's got to be some connection between the two.
Jason Peter has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're looking forward to going to Lincoln, Nebraska, teeing it up for his annual celebrity golf tournament. And once again, we want to direct you to his website. That is jasonpeter.com. We look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you, Jay.
Can't wait to see you.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment. Stay close.